Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Fresh edition of the Lombardi Line as we welcome you in Thursday from downtown Las Vegas and our Circus Sportsbook studio. Thursday is our Hall of Fame game. We are a day away as Michael Lombardi is with me. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy rest of the week. Great guest list as well today. Michael, excited to talk some Houston Texans with you in a little bit as we're going to get into it with John McClain, who is the HoustonTexans.com writer. Almost five decades fully for John McClain covering the Texans in the NFL. Brad Biggs as well from the Chicago Bears joins us coming up 1:45 Eastern. And then Adam Burke in studio today, as we are a day away as well from the College Football Betting Guide being released. Adam coming up at 2:30 Eastern. So with that, Michael, final day of July. We're almost here. Preseason football a day away, and one team with some big news with DJ Moore's extension. That is where we will start today, with the four-year, $110 million extension for DJ Moore. Highest extension in Bears history, and a very, very big deal here for Chicago. Even though we will not see any of the starters nor quarterback Caleb Williams play in tomorrow's Hall of Fame game, that is a big deal. Moore averaging $27.5 million across his four new years, which would be seventh among wide receivers currently, and that total value fifth if you extrapolate it among current wide receivers overall. So as we welcome in Michael for today, excited, a big show today here. Michael's are almost 24 hours out from the Hall of Fame game. The Moore piece is where we'll start with that extension and a very significant development, at least to lock in a guy who had a career year a season ago there for Chicago and now who has a whole lot of weapons around him.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Bears, they're almost playing fantasy football in terms of the money they're committed to their wide receiver group. The Keenan Allen, they redo his deal. They go ahead and pay for, they draft Adunze, the eighth pick overall in a prohibitive area. And then, of course, they give DJ Moore an extension and pay him a ton more money. So for me, this is they better hope they can protect. Because for all the weapons they have, and they signed Swift this offseason, for all the weapons they have, I'm not sure that the protection is going to be good enough. It wasn't last year, and they had a mobile quarterback who led their team in rushing. So I just think it's going to be... it's good that they got all these guys signed, but clearly Ryan Poles, their general manager, he values these receivers and doesn't value the defensive front. I mean, look, they have one really good defensive lineman in Sweat. I'm not sure that they have anything other, and they're going to have to rely on their scheme to get some pressure.
It's a situation, too, where I always wonder when you go into a team like Chicago that is so heavily hyped, right, into a season like this, you just compare some of the positional grades in the rankings going back from last year. It was clearly a bottom half of the league offensive line. Clearly wide receiver was league average at best, if you wanted to be generous. That was with Moore, and Moore fulfilled his end of the bargain. Well, now this year, most websites, you look across, very respected publications, they've got Chicago. This is a top five wide receiver unit across the board. This is a top 12 offensive line unit across the board. I always have some hesitation with that, where it's like, is that just a result of all the hype coming in, or is that actually real? Granted, a lot of moves made on the wide receiver front in general. When you bring in a Keenan Allen, you extend DJ Moore, you assess Roman Dunze and deem he's worthy of a top 10 pick. But that's the question to me, Michael. Is it worthy now to say this is a legit top five unit? And is also the offensive line now a group that we feel confident in helping out Caleb Williams, who really struggled? We saw what happened when he struggled getting protection in front of him at USC his last year.
Well, plus I think they're committed, Ben, to 11 personnel, right? I mean, Cole Kmet's a good player, so they're going to have to keep him on the field. And then you're not going to sit Keenan Allen down, you know, and Adunze, you draft him as high. And, of course, you've got the DJ Moore, who you just paid. And, you know, I don't know how their offensive line moved up in any rankings whatsoever. I mean, the signing of Ryan Bates with a trade from Buffalo, that's really impacted your line. I mean, the Nate Davis from Tennessee, who wasn't good enough to play for the Titans offensive line, you know, you have him. I mean, I don't get how could they move up when they really didn't add any new players in their offensive line? And then the defensive front, they did nothing to really improve their defensive front.
That's,
you know,
why
they signed DeMarcus Walker from Tennessee. Other than that.
And that's why the Hall of Fame game, too, it gives us the opportunity to talk both Houston and Chicago, because you can make an argument both are very built in a similar fashion as far as preseason expectations. Now, granted, one team actually was very, very good last year, made the playoffs, while one team ended very good after basically being out of it. and really being in that spoiler role for the back half of the year. That's why I'm excited to get into your burning questions today, both on the Texans and on the Bears. The other question, too, will be now, what do we see actually, you know, that is actionable in the Hall of Fame game where we already know the Bears, none of the starters will go. As we were talking about it yesterday, Michael, that was when a big line move happened. While the game is a little more than 24 hours out, we saw a flip of favorites here. Texans now laying a point and a half. Total continues to come down. That moved about a point to the under yesterday on the Caleb Williams news and this news of no starters going there for Chicago. Down to 31.5, and based on the quarterback experience, even in the backup side of it for Houston, it does make sense now that they would flip to the slightest of favorites there for our first game of the year tomorrow.
Well, I mean, look, let's face it. We talk about the quarterback, but the problem is when we're talking about the Bears not having a great offensive line, how much do we, how can we rely on the backups of that offensive line? And so now when, you know, Tyson Badgen comes in the game with the backup offensive line with the twos and threes and then with the backup receivers, it's hard to move the football. You know, there's not enough time. There's not enough execution. There's not enough really experience to understand how to do it. Meanwhile, you know, Houston has experienced quarterbacks, but the depth of their offensive line and how they look at receiver, it's going to be interesting to see because, you know, what you do in this Hall of Fame game is you probably don't play anybody in this game that you know has made your team. Where the guys are going to play in this game, they're fighting for roster spots.
That's what makes the Hall of Fame game. We are not, I think the casual fan is going to go, all right, this is a snooze fest after about 5 minutes. But for us, you know, the ones who really want to see the deep dive roster battles that are going on, this actually will be very important going forward for teams that have, yes, as you're talking about, Mike, a lot of questions as far as depth perspective.
No question. And that's the best way to find it, right? I mean, you got to let some of these young players play and you have to let them, you know, in a game situation where it is, they don't know whether it's run or pass. You know, they don't know whether, you know, this is going to be, we can touch the quarterback. This is really, you find out about the instincts of the players and how they handle it.
It is the game that will kick off the preseason tomorrow. We'll talk to John McClain first up here in about 25 minutes, who is it's almost five decades covering the NFL. Great to have John back as always. It'll be really nice to check in with him and then Bragg Biggs coming up after that. That'll be our Houston and Chicago focus for today. The next wave, though, Michael, as far as the Moore extension, we kind of wonder, all right, who's next? Because we've had a number of these offseason extensions. Now it's CeeDee Lamb. Guys like that, hey, he's on the clock. Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, Brandon Ayuk, who's been the one guy everybody's been talking about all offseason. Of those four, Michael, who's most likely in your mind to go next year and get their deal done as we get into camp?
Well, the DJ Moore deal helps the teams, right? It's 27.5, right? It didn't go anywhere near the $30 million mark. It didn't go anywhere near some of these other. So to me, if you're in the Lamb category, you know, you want Jefferson's deal, and I'm sure that's what he thinks he should get. You know, Ayuk's going to want that the same way, too. He doesn't have as much production as the other guys. But my sense in listening to people around the league, it sounds like Lamb's close. I don't know if that's 100% accurate, but it sounds like they're making progress towards getting a deal. I don't know if they're making progress in San Francisco on Ayuk. They've kind of gone underground on that one. But I think at some point, the San Francisco has to make a decision. You know, what are we doing here? You know, either you're playing for the tender or we're not going to have a contract. The one thing about negotiations, if you don't put a deadline on negotiations, you have no chance to get anything done.
And I wonder on the Lamb part of it, because we just talked yesterday, Jamar Chase, the comments from Mike Brown in Cincinnati, he's not in any rush. He's going to do his due diligence and do what Cincinnati has always done, which is to take their time, not necessarily bend the knee in any way. Brandon Ayuk in a similar boat where we have seen time and again what John Lynch and San Francisco's strategy has been, which is we are totally fine waiting. We are not in any rush to get this thing done. So you just wonder on the Lamb piece of between, you know, Lamb and Hill, those two would definitely make sense, right, as guys you would want to get. And I also wonder if for Jerry Jones, you kind of mentioned how it is sort of a nice piece for these team owners and GMs to sit there and go, all right, yep, 27.5. And there was already this pressure bubbling up here on Jones, who hadn't really signed anybody. It had been a very lackluster start of camp for the Cowboys, and maybe this gives a little leverage here on that front where you know they have to get the deal done, but it's now you aren't going to have to give as much money as you might have thought in the past.
Well, yeah, I mean, and look, there's no momentum in coming out of Dallas whatsoever. I mean, have you seen the crowds? I mean, there's nobody at the Cowboys practices, and usually they're always crowded. You know, and I think that's kind of I think that's a reflection of there's just not a lot of momentum on this team.
I get it. Yeah. And I mean, Dallas, it's funny in an NFC East where, I mean, what have we heard all offseason? It's been all Philly. It's like the, you know, any friction between Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, it's like nobody remembers that at all. It's all just how bad did the Cowboys choke in the postseason last year. Now, that's not to say I don't think Philadelphia isn't deserving of being the favorite. To me, they're clearly the best team in that division going into the year, but it's where perception comes into play, at least this time of year. And I do wonder if Dallas, because of, you know, the general media narrative on them, if they aren't actually just an undervalued team coming into the year. When you think about the weakness, the rebuild of the Giants, the Commanders, which to me are two of the bottom five teams in the league entering 2024, if Dallas isn't, you know, in a good position, even though Philadelphia is clearly slightly above them power ratings-wise starting this year.
No question. I mean, and there's so many questions for Dallas. And a lot of it is style of play, too, with Dallas. They were so good last year at getting the lead. They were so good at playing from in front that teams really couldn't get a chance to run the football on them. And if they don't have that explosive offense like they did last year, where they're in these tight games, people will run the football. They've done nothing to improve their run defense or their front.
It is a Dallas team sitting second in that division, 10.5 on the win total right now. A lot for us to talk about today. We'll dive in more on the NFL stuff. And it'll be great, Michael, because we'll go off the air today, get some USA men's basketball. You get to watch, see how many minutes Joel Embiid can stay on the floor for today. All I know is Sharps in on South Sudan today, Michael, about a 3-point line move down to 28-point underdogs against the USA. Can't wait for that as we wrap up the show. Michael's not wanting to give in.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to break there. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to seeing my man Embiid there.
I know you are.
But look, let's be honest. I think America sees that he's not on the same level that some of these other guys are.
We'll talk that more later on. But up next, it is some burning questions. We'll go to the Houston Texans right after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Tormented by the transfer portal, coaching carousel got you confused? Let our 2024 VSiN College Football Guide get you ready for the upcoming season. This year's College Football Betting Guide comes out tomorrow, and it includes season win total picks and previews for all 134 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create a power ratings model, calculate home field advantage, and who to bet on for the Heisman. You can get Matt Heumann's preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and what you need to know to be ready for kickoff. The College Football Betting Guide comes out tomorrow and is one of many benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. So sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. And we are thrilled in our second hour of the show coming up 2:30 Eastern to have Adam Burke, who is really a man responsible for the betting guide, not only the NFL guide, but also the College Football Guide. Adam and I are hosting the College Football Guide release special, which will air tomorrow right before Lombardi Line, Michael. So pumped to have Adam. And I know you got some teams you want to pitch, throw out at Adam for some thoughts on, because we've done the deep dive.
I've been doing some deep dive onto some of these teams. It's interesting. I've been going through the Southeast Conference, and, you know, I think people are sleeping on Milrow. I really do.
15-1 to win the Heisman.
Yeah, I think, to me, if you believe in Caden DeBoer, what he's been able to do with quarterbacks, I think there's something there. And two, I think if you just judge the player on how he performed through the year last year, from the Texas game where he wouldn't throw the ball on the move to the end of the year where he was throwing the ball, making plays with his arm and his feet, I think he's got a huge upside. I really do. He's a big man. He can run with the football. He's got a great arm. So I just think, to me, if the system is in tune, which I believe it is, will be with Caden DeBoer, I think he has a chance to really shine.
It is an Alabama team that, yes, is in a very, very new situation, but not getting any sort of buzz, at least based on what you would expect for Alabama in 2024. I know there's at least one person in the guide who has advocated for a Milrow Heisman bet. Not a bad bet to make whatsoever, considering the open-seeming nature of that Heisman Award this year. Alabama not getting any buzz, but you know who is, Michael? The Houston Texans coming into 2024.
Yes.
That's where we'll start. Burning questions for you today. And I'm glad that really two of your questions that you wanted to dive into deep here on the Texans revolve around the defense, which ended up finishing 2023 20th in pass defense on an EPA per play basis. I had the fortune of getting a lot of weak quarterbacks down the home stretch, and I took advantage in their playoff win of getting the Joe Flacco-led Cleveland Browns as well, who finally cratered after outperforming expectations down the home stretch of the season. That's the big ask now for Houston in a division with a lot of high-powered offenses in the AFC South. What can we expect from a secondary that left a lot to be desired last year, even though the team overexceeded by wide, wide margins all those preseason expectations?
Well, look, let's we all talk schedule, right? And we all talk about, you know, what they were able to do. When they held teams to under 20 points last year, they were 9-1. When they didn't, they were 2-7. Okay, so, but when you break down what everybody talks, what schedule, who's on the schedule? Who's the quarterbacks you're beating? They beat Flacco, Minshew, Trevor Lawrence once, Will Levis, Bryce Young, Derek Carr, Kenny Pickett, Zach Wilson, Kyler Murray, and Desmond Ridder. I mean, that's really, it wasn't a who's who of quarterbacks. And for a team that struggled to stop the pass, they could play the run effectively, but to stop the pass was a real problem. But what's really interesting about stopping the pass is they only allowed 10.6 incompletions per game, okay? And only Carolina and Arizona was worse. I mean, think about that. Only 10 incompletions per game. That's a zone team. There's a lot of completions. And when you have a quarterback who's really good at completing passes, you know, you're going to get a lot of yards doing that. But play Minshew or Levis, who are not good at completing a lot of throws, all of a sudden it shows up. I think that's something that they have to correct. The other thing they got to correct, Ben, is they were 31st in penalties called on the team. Almost seven penalties per game last year. They were 28th in yards allowed in penalties and the 14th in first down by penalty.
It's a young team, and even with that, there were some guys that they counted on, some of the few vets to help shore up what was a roster we viewed would have lots of growing pains. And then Steven Nelson retires. Jimmy Ward, a guy who was so good playing under D'Amico Ryans in San Francisco, but I don't know how you viewed it, Michael, watching the tape. Clearly looked like he lost a step last year, was not nearly the dynamic sideline-to-sideline player that he used to be.
Yeah, no question. And I think a lot of that is, you know, they brought him in there because he knew the defense, right? And that's so important. But this defense is all predicated on turning the ball over. The other thing I think that hurt their team last year, Ben, is because they couldn't run the ball, they couldn't reduce the game, right? They couldn't reduce the game. I mean, last year they were 21st in the league in rushing attempts per game. For a team that relies so much on play action pass, you would have thought, well, this is a team like San Francisco that's going to be able to run the ball. No, no, no. They were 31st in rushing first downs per game. They were 31st in rushing yards per percentage of their offense. This was a passing team. A complete passing team. And so as you study them in the offseason, all those play action passes are really just passes because they were never really going to run the ball. They couldn't run the ball. And so because they couldn't run the ball, the defense played almost as many plays as the offense, which is a real issue.
Now you flip it forward too. While we have the secondary questions on one side of the ball, where Houston, when they failed to generate front seven pressure last year, allowed almost 8 yards per attempt, which was bottom six in the league. Now you go to the offensive line especially, which leads right into what you're talking about, Michael, and the ability to have a much more diversified offense under OC Bobby Slowick. I mean, this O-line was just a walking dead unit last year. I mean, bruised, battered from really the first week of the year. They were never healthy. Laremy Tunsil still there on the left side of the line. Shaq Mason is a pretty reliable guard on the interior. But you just wonder, okay, A, where's the durability coming from? And B, who else are you really trusting in to fortify the rest of that line? I still can't sit here and really feel confident in saying, oh yeah, Houston, top half of the league offensive line. I have to be proven on it. And it's probably why I lost a lot of money betting against them, at least in that early part of the year last year, because I just thought they've got nobody on the O-line. And I thought they were pretty fortunate to get away with it until they eventually got some of those guys back later in the year.
Well, I mean, look, Titus Howard's been hurt most of the time. Shaq Mason has been a cap casualty for two teams, the Patriots and the Bucs. Kind of went there. They redone his contract. Kenyon Green, the first-round pick from A&M, he's yet to really be the guy. And Tunsil, I'm sure he's going to want to raise after all these guys get their contracts done. So you're right. And look, when Dalton Schultz is your main tight end, it's hard to run the football behind him, right? It's hard to. And last year, they had no juice at running back. I mean, Damian Pierce, I don't know what happened to him. He was good as a rookie, averaged under 3 yards a carry. Now they signed Joe Mixon. Look, one thing watching Cincinnati last year, I thought Joe Mixon had no juice left in his lower body. I know the media wants to make him out to be the same player he once was. That's not the case at all. I think, to me, he's got to prove that he still has explosiveness in how he plays the game, which he didn't really show there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, look, they've got to figure out a way to run the football more effectively because people have studied him, and they're going to put more pressure on him, and they're going to put more pressure on Stroud.
In addition to that, you also, and this also is a very kind of quasi-similar point to the offensive, the production they had, which was so much predicated on the deep ball, but also the fact that Houston got a lot of help on the special teams last year. Your final burning question for Houston, a team that was second in non-offensive touchdowns last year. Not one of those stats you want to just count on happening year over year. Still a really good unit, but that is a valid question to ask for a team that is looking to find production from more ways, especially on offense.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I mean, they were able to, their kicking game was very good last year in terms of coveraging, making plays. And I think as we talk about, as the schedule heats up, right, as you have to play against better teams, especially in passing, you know, where you have to play against teams that can really throw the football, you know, and then I think to me that becomes the issue. Houston, 10.6 incompletions per game. The number one team in the league last year was Baltimore. They allowed 14.4 incompletions per game. That's the number you've got to get to. I mean, the last three games for Baltimore, they only averaged 8 incomplete passes.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. I mean, you know. And so it's really remarkable. And so, and the last three games for Houston, you know, 9.7. Think about that. I mean, so they've got to figure out a way to get better in that area.
You also go now from the fourth place to first place, and that has a big impact on scheduling. Sixth hardest schedule by opposing win totals in the league. When I look at the power ratings as a result of all that, Houston, I have about, I've updated my numbers here, I have about a point better than Jacksonville heading into the year, about 3.5 points better than Indianapolis. Is that really worth making Houston a plus 105 or even money favorite to win the division when you have Jacksonville and Indy sitting there around plus 275 to 3-1? No way. It's just a matter of hype. And we're getting, I believe, Mike, a little bit out in front of our skates on Houston, where we just saw what happened with Jacksonville going from worst to first last year, how they struggled to duplicate success in that same role. That's why, for me, as much as I like Houston, I still believe they're the best team to start the year in the division. The gap is way more narrow than what these odds would indicate.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think they're going to have to play a better rounded game against better quarterbacks. And it's going to be week in and week out, it's going to be harder. And they're catching no one by surprise. I mean, Bobby Slowick's going to have to change what he does because people have spent from February 1st up until they play him on studying what he does, how he calls the game, how he wants to throw it. You know, and if they can't run it with the outside zone the way they do with Kyle Shanahan, all of a sudden, people are going to say, you know, forget about playing the run here. Let's just get after them.
No doubt. Well, can't wait to get John McClain's take on this. Longtime beat reporter for the Texans. He will join us next to talk more Houston when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number one of the Lombardi Line rolls along. I'm Ben in for Stormy here rest of the week. Michael Lombardi is here, ready to go. We're just over a day away from the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, Houston Texans and Chicago Bears. We'll get into some of our burning questions for the Bears in our second hour of the show. Also preview the college football betting guide set to come out tomorrow here on our network, Michael. But right now, after talking some burning questions on the Houston Texans, excited to welcome the authority, really, on all things Houston Texans football, as we welcome in on our progressive guest line, John McClain. We'll be in Canton, Ohio tomorrow, writer for HoustonTexans.com, entering his 48th year covering the NFL. That's right, Michael, John's first year. You were preparing to enter your freshman year at Hofstra, so that's a nice comp for everybody out there. Great to have John on. Hope you're doing well, sir, and looking forward to catching up here and talking all things Texans.
Guys, I'm doing great. Thank you. I've been doing this. I'm guessing Mike was about 5 years old when I started my first camp in 1977. Back when there were 6 preseason games, they called them exhibitions, and training camp was 8 weeks long, and they did full pads, full contact, 2-a-day practices from the first day.
And John, just for the record, the Houston Oilers, who you covered for many years, didn't leave Houston or the state of Texas to have those practices, did they?
No, they. It was an amazing experience back then, when I was young, covering the Oilers, all the characters they had. Everybody went on the road back then. The reason was the facilities in your city were awful, and they were not conducive to having training camp. Now most teams have it at their facility because the facilities are incredible. But I think teams miss something about camaraderie, bonding, going on the road for weeks and hanging out. And I know I sure like doing it the way it used to be.
How things have changed. Yes, John McClain with us right now. At McClain underscore on underscore NFL as we now flip things to Canton, Ohio. For someone like you, you certainly have an appreciation for Canton as someone who's on the Pro Football Hall of Fame committee. You've been honored by PFWA as well back in 06 with the back then the Dick McCann Memorial Award. So for people who haven't been to Canton and for people who aren't really sure how this week actually goes, you know, the football is kind of a sideshow, for being honest, as to how the whole week goes. Help us put in context just what this week is like for the players, how the preparation actually goes, since it is really a lot different than just your run-of-the-mill standard preseason game.
Well, the veterans love it because the veterans don't play. It's like a glorified scrimmage. Back when I started, the starters would not play in the first game. They'd play one quarter in the second, two quarters in the third game, and then in the last exhibition, they would play three quarters to get them built up for the regular season. Now it's more like college. I don't even know if college football can go from working out against themselves to playing big-time football. Why couldn't the NFL? But the Canton, the first time I went to Canton was in 85, and I've probably been 50 times. My favorite time to go is in the winter when you're covering a Browns game because there's not as many people there. And this weekend, enshrinement weekend, Canton grows to about 250,000, and it's a lot of fun. My favorite event is not the induction. Now, you're right. The game is not even secondary. But the induction is great on Saturday morning. But the best event is the Gold Jacket Dinner on Friday night at the Canton Civic Center. Andre Johnson, the wide receivers, the first Texan. There are going to be thousands of Houston fans up there who want to see him go in. And I told him, I said, in the Canton Civic Center, you will come out of an exit, and you will be with Gary Kubiak, who's his presenter, and you will walk through a gauntlet of gold jacket-clad Hall of Famers, high-fiving you, patting you on the back, shaking your hand as you walk up a ramp, and you get on that big stage. The strobe lights are going. The music is blaring. Everybody's standing. They're shooting videos, taking pictures. Gary Kubiak will help Roger Goodell take off your suit coat, put your gold jacket on. Then you will walk around that stage holding your hands up to everybody. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience that will never be duplicated, and that's the one the NFL should run on the NFL network start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, to get those behind-the-scenes look are tremendous. So let's talk about the Texans, John. This year, with the expectations running rampant, last year there were none. This year they are overflowing with expectations. One of the areas that I think they did a great job was convincing people they could run the ball last year when they actually couldn't run the ball at all. Have they improved, or how much energy have they given to trying to get this run game going in their offense this year?
They haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher since Carlos Hyde in 19. They haven't had a decent running game since Arian Foster was leading the league in rushing. And they're hoping in the second year under offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick that Damian Pierce, their outstanding rookie 2 years ago, will pick up the zone scheme. And they brought in Joe Mixon. He's averaged 12 touchdowns over the last 3 years. They need somebody to get the ball inside the 5-yard line who can run it without having to rely solely on Stroud's passing and every once in a while is running. And they think with Pierce and Joe Mixon that they'll have a good 1-2 punch when they get close. But that's a great point, Mike. You know, nothing like helps a quarterback more than a good running game. And one reason Stroud's performance last year was even more remarkable is because he didn't have one.
John McClain with us right now on our Progressive Guest Line, writer for HoustonTexans.com, breaking down the expectations for Houston. They are very lofty coming into 2024. A lot of the hype, too, it centers around that offense that we're just talking about, but also there's the defense here where the secondary struggled last year, especially when the front seven did not generate pressure, bottom six unit on a yards per attempt basis to opposing quarterbacks. What are your expectations based on who has been brought back, where the team lost a couple of vets to either retirement or think about some of the shifting and shaking that's gone along where you still have Derek Stingley, but there is some question marks there about who will round out the rest of that secondary, John. What are your thoughts from the early returns in camp on that front?
Let me go back to last season. They played the worst division in the NFL, the NFC South. They played a last place schedule after winning three games 3 years in a row. And this year, they play a first-place schedule. They play five division winners. They play 11 games against teams that had winning record, and they play a murderer's row of quarterbacks. Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, who makes the calls on defense, signed 15 veteran free agents and used five of their nine draft choices on defensive players. Kamari Lassiter, their top pick, second round, he's been outstanding. He sees that starting job outside opposite Derek Stingley in the offseason, and he hasn't let go. And so they had Kalen Bullock from USC in the third round. He's got a lot of range. He's tall, he's thin, he's fast. But they got to get a better pass rush, which is one reason they signed Danielle Hunter. And then Ego Autry had a career-high 11.5 sacks last year. Now he's gone for six games because he was tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter be outside. Autry would have been inside in passing situations. It's not often you find a defense that sets a record for sacks, team record for sacks, and then lets both its defensive tackles go, who will combine for 11 of those sacks. So they're starting over inside. They've got a lot of veterans. We can't figure out who those starters are going to be. Excuse me, but I believe Will Anderson Jr. will become a perennial double-digit guy. And bringing Danielle Hunter back to Houston, where he's from, led the league in tackles for loss, to go with those 16.5 sacks, it's got to start up front. They're good at linebacker. Brought in Azeez Al-Shaair, the leading tackler for the Titans, who led them in snaps. He's reunited to D'Amico Ryans. They were in San Francisco together. Christian Harris, who really exploded at the end of last year in his second season and in the playoffs, he's back. So they got, I think they'll have five new starters on defense and one on offense.
John, you've covered this team for so long and you've been a veteran of the league. What's your expectations? What's your prediction for them this year?
I think this, because of the schedule and everything, I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl contender. I thought that might be the case next year. This team's never even been beyond the second round of the playoffs. Every time they've been in the playoffs, Mike, they've won the division. They've won that division game at home, gone on the road, and lost. Last year, they were tied at the Ravens at halftime, then got blown out in the second half. So I'm going to pick them 10-7 again. But it wouldn't surprise me if they're not a better team that finished 9-8. And them in Indianapolis and Jacksonville, they were one separated by one game last year. That could happen again.
9.5 on that win total as well for Houston. Always great to have the insights from John McClain. Enjoy the trip up to Canton, sir. Always appreciate you coming on with us.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much. Nice talking to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. We'll continue the discussion on the Hall of Fame game up next because Brad Biggs from Chicago and the Chicago Tribune joins us to talk some Bears football right after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look, VSiN.com, our Michael Lombardi has the biggest question facing each AFC team. Fresh article there. You can check it right now. We also have full breakdown on the Hall of Fame game. Adam Burke will join us in studio next hour. He has a breakdown, as does Steve Mackinnon. on all the past trends from Hall of Fame games past, all along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. It's optimized for mobile. It is our new look, VSiN.com. Talking Hall of Fame game right now with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson here, Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Really good to check in with John McClain here in our last segment. Getting the Houston side of things. Now let's go to Chicago. Michael, out on our progressive guest line. We'll have your burning questions for the Bears coming up in our second hour. But right now we go to a guy who's been on top of things in Chicago for a long, long time. Frequent contributor here on VSiN. Great to have Brad Biggs back with us on VSiN as we go out to our progressive guest line. Beat reporter for the Bears for the Chicago Tribune. We'll start with the news of the day here, Brad, with the extension. You go into the wide receiver room and DJ Moore. What did you make of the process there and the final outcome, which is about a $27.5 million average value there for Moore with that four-year extension?
Yeah, I think it's a situation where DJ Moore was an exception to how the Bears typically go about business. Generally speaking, if a player's got multi-years remaining on his contract, they're not interested in talking about a new deal. But DJ outperformed the contract last year, a contract that the team inherited when they acquired him in the March 2023 trade with the Carolina Panthers. And so you're looking at a guy who is a leader on the field, is a leader in the locker room, and went about his business the right way. Full participation in the voluntary off-season program, not making a big deal about his contract situation. And so I think it was probably a relatively smooth negotiation for all parties. I think the Bears realized, you know, there's a pecking order to the locker room and therefore an order in which you need to go about business. So you kind of let DJ get out of line, get to the front of the line, and take care of him and have him now under contract through the 2029 season.
Brad, I mean, they've got money in DJ. They got a top 10 pick in Adunze. They've got, obviously, they redid Keenan Allen's deal and traded for him. Cole Kmet's a really good player. Do you see this team being exclusively in 11 personnel? And how is that going to affect the offensive line, which I have grave concerns about in terms of pass protection?
Yeah, they've got a lot of guys. And you didn't even mention Gerald Everett, who they picked up who's, you know, kind of strictly a pass-catching tight end. I don't think they're going to be exclusively in 11. It's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out. Does Kari Blassingame, the fullback, make the roster? Is there a spot for him on the team? Will they have enough use for him to justify keeping him and giving him a uniform on Sunday? Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, did not have a fullback in Seattle last year. Will he adjust this year? They added Mercedes Lewis this summer, brought him back for a second season. And as you know, he's strictly kind of a blocking tight end. But with the personnel they have, yeah, they've got the ability to have three wide receivers out there, even four, a lot of the time and kind of mix and match. But I think if you want to take some pressure off the rookie quarterback, take some pressure off that offensive line, yeah, you're going to have to run the football and be good at it with DeAndre Swift and a couple other backs that are behind him on the roster.
He is Brad Biggs joining us right now on our progressive guest line at Brad Biggs. Big question for me, Brad, with, granted, a lot of additions made and big name additions made for the Bears, but if you look at a lot of the narrative, the projections, the consensus from around the league last year, positionally, Bears were below average in offensive line, running back, about league average in wide receiver. You look at it now, the consensus projections, it's a top five wide receiver room, top 12 offensive line core, and then on the running back side, it's also viewed, especially with the addition of a DeAndre Swift, to be around or slightly better than league average. How much of that do you believe is real? How much of that is a product of all the hype surrounding a number one overall pick in Caleb Williams and a very strong finish to a season that got off to a rough start in 2023 for the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge question. I think if you're going to stack up wide receiver rooms, the Bears are legit, right? They belong in the top five with the guys that they have there. The big, you know, offensive line, 12th, if they have the 12th best offensive line in the league this year, that's going to be a huge win for them. Huge. you know, if they can get to middle of the pack and there's, you know, your grading and your rankings and your evaluations of that's going to be wildly subjective and shift on a game to game basis. But Mike nailed it. You know, that's the question mark for this team. And how are they going to look? You know, Nate Davis, who they signed to a $30 million 3-year contract a year ago, he wasn't good in 2024 for the Bears. He's out with what they hope is a minor injury right now. They've been rotating Ryan Bates, who they picked up in a trade with Buffalo, and Coleman Shelton, the former Ram at center. And so a lot of people locally have questions about the center position and right guard and what Nate Davis is going to look at it. And I kind of take a step back and say, those are valid questions. Those are storylines we need to track. But the big deal here to me is, what will they get out of Braxton Jones at left tackle going into year three? Former fifth round pick, played every snap as a rookie, missed 6 games a year ago with a neck injury. The Bears had an opportunity to say, hey, we're going to get a left tackle of the future in the first round. They could have taken protection for Caleb Williams with that 9th overall pick. They decided to go with Rome Odunze. They really like his upside. And in doing so, I think gave a vote of confidence to Braxton Jones that, hey, this guy can be the protection we need for our number one pick in Caleb Williams, but he's got to go out and do it. And so kind of charting how things look for Braxton Jones at left tackle, how he plays this season, that's a huge storyline, because you're talking about the left tackle, and if he's your guy, that's great. They got him on under contract for one more year in that rookie deal. You can talk about the possibilities for him after the season. If he's not that guy, that immediately becomes your number one area of need heading into the offseason. And as you guys know, buying a left tackle down at the free agency store is super pricey. And to get a really good one, you probably need to be near the top of the draft, right? They come off the board fast, the good ones.
But let's shift to another place they come off the board fast. Defensive ends. I mean, this team passed up Latua. You talk about passing up an offensive lineman. They passed up Murphy, a 3 technique, which Eberflus, if you gave him truth serum, said the most important position on his defense is 3 technique. It's always been that way. Last year, they had 30 sacks. 6 came after they made the Sweat trade. Like, where are they getting pressure on the passer with this defensive front, Brad? Like, I don't see it.
Yeah, another valid question. And I thought Byron Murphy was a real option for them at 9 as well. I think they really liked him in the pre-draft process. And anybody that's going to play Tampa 2 is going to tell you exactly what you said, that the 3 technique is the motor that makes that engine run. Jervon Dexter, their second-round pick out of Florida a year ago, has reshaped his body. He's leaner. He's meaner here in year 2. Dexter had kind of quietly a pretty solid second half of the season last year. Now, the sack production wasn't anything to take a look at. I think he had like 2.5. But he had a quarterback hit in, I want to say, 8 of his final 9 games, and he was a 2-gap guy at Florida. Okay. The Gators asked him to play that way in their scheme. And so you got a guy that's 6'6", 313 pounds. So adjusting his pad level at the NFL level is something that's got to be a daily focus. And then they were asking him to 1-gap and penetrate and shoot. And so it was sort of a process for him to adjust, and he's looked good in the padded practices they've had so far. He looks more explosive. I think he feels it. So there's got to be some hope that he can be a disruptive guy on the interior. What's the sack total look like? I don't know. He doesn't have to pile up huge numbers there, though, to make a big difference. Opposite Montez Sweat, you've got question marks. DeMarcus Walker, starting end, a guy to keep a look at, Austin Booker. He's got real length,
And he's shown up a little bit in training camp practices thus far as well.
Brad Biggs with us right now on our Progressive Guest Line. Really appreciate the time, Brad. That was some really, really good deep dive info on the Bears. Appreciate it.
Great job, Brad. Thank you.
Have a great day.
We will. We'll take a break, come back, wrap up everything as we start hour number two here on the Lombardi Line.